a coalition of workers, of faith leaders, of housing advocates, of climate activists, of neighbors, all coming together, bringing forward common sense solutions grounded in the reality that Minnesota has a massive housing shortage that is driving up the cost of housing for everyone, and that now is the time to legalize more housing choices for Minnesotans so that we can build more of the homes that Minnesotans desperately want. From young families trying to find a starter home, to seniors trying to downsize and find a townhome in their communities, finding an affordable home these days is like finding a needle in the haystack, and then getting in a bidding war with 10 other people for that needle. The lack of housing choices for Minnesotans can be so immensely frustrating, and that dream of a home is slipping away. That's why we're here today, to propose solutions that are responsive to what we're hearing from Minnesotans that are asking for more homes, more choices, and more places. Our need for action is urgent, because make no mistake, if we accept the status quo, we will gradually lose our grip on affordability, and Minnesota will become a region like the coasts, where you need $1 million to buy a modest-priced home. But we are not predestined for that future. We can listen to Minnesotans. We can take action and ensure that all Minnesotans have more choices to find a home they love in a community they love, and that's what you're going to hear about today. Next, I want to turn it over to Chair Senator Port.
Good morning. I'm Senator Lindsay Port. I'm the chair of the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee. I represent District 55 in the South Metro. Minnesota has a supply shortage of over 100,000 housing units, and the simple reality is that every community in the state needs more housing. The Senate Housing Committee went on a statewide tour of cities and towns across the state last summer and heard about the local housing needs from every region in Minnesota. Duluth needs more multifamily housing. Rochester has a supply gap of 500 units a year. Worthington and communities like Windham, Casson, and Roseau have deep workforce housing needs. Suburban communities are falling behind on single family and missing middle production. Zoning reform that allows communities to build modern housing has untold benefits, including increasing affordability, making communities more livable, and having enormous positive environmental effects. It should be easier to build more housing of all types and kinds, especially those that Minnesotans currently want but aren't being built. We should reduce barriers that are driving up the cost of building homes, and we should eliminate exclusionary zoning practices that are exacerbating racial housing gaps. Enacting these changes now will help Minnesotans of all backgrounds afford the type of home that meets the needs of their families. Where zoning reform has been successful across the country, it has required a coalition exactly like this one, where legislators, cities and towns, builders, trades, and housing advocates from all perspectives come together. It's Minnesota's turn to recognize the enormous housing needs facing our state and to take action addressing the housing crisis. We cannot afford the status quo. Minnesotans deserve the freedom to choose the kind of home that meets their needs in the community that they want. The time is now to move these bills in both the House and the Senate. I'd like to welcome up a member of our Minnesota communities, Stephanie.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie Saji. It's with a PH and an IE, and then S and Sam, A is an apple, J is an jam, I. I'm so grateful to be invited here to speak with you today and share just one perspective on some of the challenges in accessing affordable, sustainable, and housing. Today, we gather on land originally stewarded by the Dakota people, and I'm continuing to learn to walk the values of the Dakota of being a good relative and friend, and deepen my understanding of how similar principles in many cultures, faiths, and systems of belief around the world believe similarly, including mine. While working as a model and actor for over 25 years, I'm also an entrepreneur whose past roles include president, owner, and operator of a commercial hydroponic greenhouse. We harvested 4,000 heads of leafy greens every single week, 365 days a year, year-round, here in Minnesota. During that time, I owned 5 acres of land outright, an adjacent 17.73 acres, with a single-family home with equity and a business and a vision to do no harm on every level. Throughout my life experiences, I've learned that no one is immune to housing instability and ultimately homelessness, which can result to many contributing factors, depending on your who you are. But for me, in my case, course of control was one of the main factors that contributed to my housing instability and ultimately homelessness. And as an example, just one of the law firms I was required to retain to respond cost me $125,000 post-divorce. On paper, the fallout that resulted from being targeted by course of control created new barriers for me to access housing traditionally. And it took me almost a decade after I fled that to be fortified enough to purchase a home again. Even though I was able to stabilize again and again, the longer the experiences went on and the less capacity and resources became available, the more barriers and responsibilities I had. And I was unable to afford a single family home or even actually rent. However, a duplex, one that had one vacant unit for my family, my children and I, and one that was being rented by someone who was willing and able to afford that rent, actually was a possibility for me into home ownership. And so, in combination with some family support, that was the most accessible housing to me, and I was able to have the rent count as income to offset the purchase price, and it also reduced the portion of the mortgage that I had to pay to 30%, so I created my own affordable housing through this avenue. I'm a person who experienced something that our laws don't yet have the answer for and our culture doesn't fully recognize. And what I experienced increased the need for my need for safe, affordable, sustainable housing and also made it more elusive for me. On the micro and the macro, the mechanisms of harm, course of control, and financial abuse tactics have been utilized throughout human history and are still being utilized today. Anyone could be affected temporarily or permanently by circumstances that disrupt their self-sufficiency. Both the micro and the macro impact of course of control often impacts housing access in the present times and sometimes for generations, depending on the compounding impact to resources, capacity, barriers, and responsibilities for those affected. This legislation seeks to reduce inequitable barriers and increase options that work for individuals and families so that they can not only afford their home, but it can be a lily pad. I believe that if we weave together successfully, the impact we will make will sustainably stabilize families, increasing access to agency so they are free to participate in life beyond survival mode and actually thrive. My experience thus far has shown me that housing instability, inaccessibility, and affordability has many compounding contributing factors, which for those affected needs a multitude of options, including housing that honors culturally specific needs. Thank you all for continuing your work to collaborate to find long-term solutions to our current global housing crisis, and that can work for everyone, a step towards transforming the Minnesota paradox. And I pray that this speech brings no harm to anyone, and it allows everyone to see me more clearly and for more relationships to be built so I can know and see others more clearly as well. Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kamasa Duart, and I'm with SEIU Healthcare Minnesota in Iowa. Our union represents over 50,000 healthcare workers. We work in hospitals, clinics, homes, and home care for over a dozen years. We have worked in long-term care. I have worked in long-term care, nursing homes, and has a PCA. I know how hard to find affordable housing is. I know of the few options that we all have with people without money. We need to build an abundant supply of housing so that everyone can afford, can find affordable housing. This bill will help build more homes for workers. A few years ago, in the middle of COVID pandemic, I went through a crisis. I had been living in Oakdale in a two-bedroom apartment, paying $1,050 a month for rent. It was extremely crowded for me and my five children, but I could afford it. Then two blows hit my family. I lost my main PCA clients and my income. Second, the COVID housing program expired, so I lost my place. I tried to find other options, but there was nothing affordable for less than $1,500. The next few years, I spent much time living in my car with my five children, in my Jeep. We would park overnight in various locations and try to go to school in the morning and go to work. Second, Sometimes I could barely afford food or a hotel. But even then, I had to sneak my children into the hotel because there was too many of us. Other times, I had to decide either to fix my Jeep or to have a place for my children to sleep. Eventually, I got some extra help from my family and more work as a PCA. So now, we're actually living in a better home. Thank God to that. Yeah. But after a year and a half of being homeless, sleeping in your car, and not having enough food to provide for your family because the rent is too high and your family is too big, you can't go to a shelter because they don't have enough room. And I felt like a failure as a parent. So this bill would make it legal to build more housing that people like me would be able to afford in Oakdale. And like most cities, almost all the land is currently reserved for single-family homes. Only a tiny fraction of land is affordable, available for more affordable duplexes and other more affordable types of housing. I understand that lots of people like a big house and a big yard. That is not my dream too, but I should not be that should not be the only kind of housing. When you're struggling, you want a roof, some walls. You also want a stable place, and a stable and safe place. It should be legal everywhere to build places like that. It would help people like me to have more options and wouldn't hurt anyone. This is a pro-workers issue. My union supports similar reform when they were proposed several years ago in Minneapolis, just a month ago. We testified in support when St. Paul did the same thing. Additional housing in Minneapolis will help lower rents throughout the metro area. This is like a huge pay increase for our members. Thank you.
Well, I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to follow that. But good morning. My name is State Representative Jim Nash. I am the Republican whip in the House of Representatives. I am in my 10th year of advocating for housing reform here at the Capitol, and I want to share some of my experiences and thoughts with you today. One of the principal areas that I have contributed to this bill has been in the aesthetic mandate reforms. Aesthetic mandates are effectively requirements that municipalities put into existence that don't have either a structural requirement or benefit or an insular benefit. And what that winds up doing is add cost to the overall price of the house. And a study by the realtors nationally says that for every $1,000 that you add to the price of a house, you're pricing 4,000 potential buyers out of the market. So $1,000 removes 4,000 potential buyers. And I think that that's a very salient point that this bill will address. Over the Christmas break, I had an opportunity to visit family in Texas. And I was scrolling Instagram at 2 in the morning, as I often do because I don't sleep very much. And I saw a unique product that was listed by one of the national builders. And I arranged for a tour to go and look at some of these products. And they're smaller homes. They're 1,000-foot slab on grade. And as I was waiting in the model home to tour this facility, this new home, I was behind a woman who was there, and because it's not a big space, I was listening to the conversation, and she says, "I am so excited to be able to buy a home for the first time today, because I never thought it was achievable." She said that she had rented her entire life. She owned her own cleaning business, and she was so proud to be able to create generational wealth by buying one of these homes. That's what this bipartisan group of legislators and a very broad spectrum of interests from around the state of Minnesota is trying to get done today. We are trying to make it so that folks who want to buy a home of varying sizes can. And I think of my own children. I've got 6 kids, and one of them sent a message to me years ago. He was deployed in the Navy, and he goes, "Dad, I always know that the place that we have in Waconia is our North Star. I have the ability to find my way home like any good sailor by navigating home by the North Star." So many people in the state of Minnesota don't have the ability to buy a piece of property that allows them to build that generational wealth, to plug into their community, to add to their community, have their community add into their lives. We are 106,000 houses behind right now in the state of Minnesota. The status quo has put us where we are. So the status quo needs to be changed. And this group of legislators, this group of people who are here to support this effort, recognizes how important that is to our state, to its long-term viability, to its vibrancy. And we are saying that this bill, we're gonna try to shepherd it across the finish line so that people like the lady that I saw in Texas who owns a cleaning business can, for the first time in their lives, buy a piece of property and put a house on it that belongs to them and create so many things that benefit both themselves, their family, and their community. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Larry Kraft. I represent St. Louis Park in the House, District 46A. Before I start, I do want to just thank Stephanie and Cormasa for your bravery in sharing your stories and for making it even more clear why what we're doing is so important. So thank you. You may hear a lot about missing middle housing in this discussion, so I thought I'd start by defining it a bit. It's housing that's between single-family homes and mid-rise apartments, such as duplexes, townhomes, triplexes, cottage homes, courtyard clusters. So I am really excited about this bipartisan bill. When I've been out in my community, I hear so often, I've lived here for 30 years, for 40 years, but I couldn't afford my house today. Or my kids can't afford to live here. Or I work here and can't afford to live here. As has been said, we have a housing crisis in Minnesota, so we need to build a lot more. Now, I got into politics to do something about climate change, and what I've realized is that if we don't build that housing in the right places and in the right way, we'll make our climate problem and our sprawl problem immensely worse. Our number one source of greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota is transportation, and land use drives transportation emissions. We need to make it easier over time to live our lives without having to drive as much. Where we build homes is key. By the way, the side benefits of what we're doing will be cost savings, less time in traffic, less air pollution, and more time with our families and in our communities. Another side benefit is farmland. A study by the American Farmland Trust said that the kind of development we're encouraging can save almost 300,000 acres of Minnesota farmland from being paved over by 2040. The missing middle part of this bill does two basic things. It legalizes missing middle housing and ensures supportive city zoning and review processes. It's about removing systemic impediments and setting up incentives so the result is right for housing and climate change, and so more Minnesotans can find homes and build wealth in the communities where they want to live, work, and raise a family.
Bonjour, everybody. I'm Leish Kozlowski. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm proud to represent Duluth in the House and also the vice chair of the People of Color and Indigenous Caucus. As a scrappy kid growing up in the streets of Duluth, coming to the halls of power here at the Capitol, I also want to say that thank you to my relatives here for speaking from your heart. Growing up, there's a lot of shame around, growing up with housing instability, of being homeless in our own homelands. And I know that my story is your story, like too many Minnesotans who have struggled growing up, struggling for housing. And little did I know that growing up in the most disinvested neighborhood was actually by design. Since the 1930s, local, state, and federal government has been effectively using this exclusionary zoning that we've been talking about to keep people of color, especially Black Minnesotans, pushed to the outskirts of communities. And that's led to our structural inequities across education, employment, and huge gaps in wealth and home ownership. And what I believe that we're standing up here to say in our bipartisan fashion, broad coalition, is that no one in any corner of our state should be allowed to continue utilizing tools that were crafted with the explicit purpose of keeping certain people down and out. And here's the thing that I know about our people is that we just keep rising, don't we? And the thing is that it's not just hurting us. It's hurting all Minnesotans. And it's hurting our economy, and it's leading to a public health crisis with homelessness. As state and local governments across this state, from Bemidji to Pipestone to Grand Marais, find creative solutions to get around our zoning to build more housing, our current patchwork approach makes building more expensive, challenging, and time-consuming, and we know time is money. At a time when we need 100,000-plus more affordable units, multifamily is being treated as less than single-family homes and faces unique burdens in the public perception, but it's a critical part to our state's diverse housing stock. So I want to tell you a bit about multi-unit family housing. It stimulates and sustains local economies, and that's why with this bill, we're going to make it easier to build mixed income and affordable homes that will grow our economy and workforce opportunities. It's about increasing our quality of life and creating family-friendly communities, where we have elders and families who can afford to live in the neighborhoods near their transit, near amenities like grocery stores, like growing up in a food desert we didn't have access to, and being priced out of our communities. With multifamily housing, we can invest in our and support our cities who are innovating and working to build more housing at lower costs more quickly while expanding our tax base. Multi-unit family housing has been shown to increase tax generation by over 10 times that of suburban development. So there's just so many positives. And as Representative Whip Nash mentioned, you know, looking to places like Montana, they called it the Montana miracle. And I believe that we can repeat that here. Maybe we're like the Kansas City Chiefs, whether you're here for the football or you're here for Taylor Swift, we're going to get this thing across the line and get that gold. So I just want to say let's go, that together it's clear 70% plus of Minnesotan voters have said we need to come together across lines of difference to tackle our housing shortage, to tackle these racial wealth gaps, and we can do that with this bill and the work that we are doing to build a movement that makes housing legal and make sure that everybody is taken care of in Minnesota. Next up, I want to invite Senator Mitchell.
Thank you so much. I don't have a Taylor Swift joke, so this is pressure. I'm Senator Nicole Mitchell from District 47, which is Woodbury and South Maplewood. I am also the chief author in the Senate. And I want to thank you all for being here today, especially all the people who have worked so tirelessly on the housing issue for years in a really bipartisan way, because it takes all those perspectives coming to the table to get this done. This is a new space for me, but I think if we look closely at it and just some of the stories that we heard here today, it touches so many different topics. So for example, I work a little bit more on child protection things, but safe and stable housing has a huge piece in child protection and keeping families together and keeping them stable. Much like my fellow author, my House author, Representative Kraft, I actually started down the road on this particular bill from an environmental perspective. I'm a meteorologist. I've closely monitored climate change, educated on climate change, and from all of my community outreach, Minnesotans really care about the environment and protecting it and doing things in a sustainable way. A lot of people do not know that when we talked about the impact of transportation and how bringing the transportation piece together can cut carbon emissions, but 40% of our carbon dioxide emissions actually comes from the real estate sector, with half of that coming from residential housing. And within that, 70% is what is produced by building operations, and 30% is the building of housing itself. So part of what we're trying to do here, in addition to making it more affordable and more accessible, is look at how we're building. Can we build in more efficient ways that the initial costs are lower and the initial impact to the environment is lower, but also that we're making more energy efficient units as well, putting them closer to transportation, doing other things that will reduce our impacts and our footprint as we go forward. So I think that's really an important piece of all of this, is making sure that we are good stewards of our land. Current housing policies typically prioritize large homes, and with the excessive climate and financial burdens, the housing system isn't environmentally or economically stable right now. Enhancing the sustainability also plays a vital role in our broader strategy to decrease carbon emissions and safeguard our environment for future generations. These housing options are intentionally smaller that we're allowing with this bill going forward and situated near essential amenities, crucial elements in that environmental impact while also making it more likely that more families can get into homes. This represents forward-thinking solution addressing some of the most urgent challenges confronting our state without sacrificing the aspects of community that Minnesotans already cherish. So I'm so proud to put this bill forward. And again, thank you for the work of everyone that came together to do this. With that, we will open it for questions.
Republicans. Representative Howard brought one. Do you have co-authors, Republicans?
I do.
Yes, I'm working closely with Senator Dreheim and Senator Lucero. They couldn't come today, but we'll be hearing bills by both of them in this area.
And do you expect bipartisan support and votes?
I do.
Through the process, okay.
Can someone speak to how this might affect the litigation in Minneapolis on the 2040 plan? Specifically, if this passes, you would be ordering the city to do what it has already done, but it had been prevented in litigation from carrying out. Would this impact that? Would this make that lawsuit go away?
I'd answer that in a couple ways. One, we're introducing an agenda that includes multiple bills in this work, and one of the bills that we will be working to move the session, again, on a bipartisan basis, would be to address an incongruity now in state law raised by the 2040 lawsuit that would make sure that cities have the ability to plan and move forward. We've worked on that bill. It was introduced last year, and we'll move it forward this year. We believe that's a bill that'll have support from our cities and have support from our environmental community as well. And so we're hoping to, in tandem, work on these, but also pass that piece of legislation this year as well.
Funny you should mention cities. I see that they're not here. Are the cities and the suburbs on your bills, are they the villains here?
Absolutely not. And I would say I think we have some council members and some former city council members here. I know there's folks that will testify in support of the bill that are from the city. We recognize and value our city partners, their expertise, their local knowledge, and cities that are moving in this direction. I would note that more than 1 million Minnesotans already live in a city that has taken some kind of action on the policy proposals we're proposing today. And we want to unlock that innovation and allow it to prosper. And we also want to provide investment for things like infrastructure, the kinds of things that are important in a local state partnership. We think there's room to continue. We've already had really good conversation with cities to move in a productive path forward.
I noticed you said policies. Does this mean there's no fiscal note or spending after the record spending on this last year and kind of appetite to pull back on spending?
This is a policy proposal. What I would say about the investment piece that I think is important is, yes, we had historic investments. I'll just wait a sec. So what I wanted to mention is, you know, we had historic investments, more than $1 billion in housing last year, and that is warranted. It's going to make a difference for thousands of Minnesotans. But we're not going to maximize our public investments in housing if the underlying housing ecosystem is making illegal the kinds of housing that Minnesotan wants. That's why this sort of policy reform is so important and complements what we were able to do last year.
And no spending attached?
No.
Okay.
Well, I will say part of this agenda would call for more investment for infrastructure for cities. We did some of that last year through a bonding bill. And so we'll see an economic forecast. Where there's investment in this proposal, it's to provide resources to cities to meet the needs of their communities.
And bonding or cash?
We'll see how the session plays out, but we've done both ways in this bucket.
So to policy, Representative Nash mentioned the small homes that are available in Texas, and I also know they're available in Oregon because New York Times just did a story about that. Are those kinds of homes currently not able to be built in Minnesota? And so exactly how does the policy change?
Good question. I would say that if they were allowed to be built, you'd see them. What's going on right now is it's not being moved forward by city councils around the state. And, you know, I think there's an important distinction that you'll hear from municipalities that this is taking away a lot of local control. I think I've used the term for a long time. I fully support local control. I don't support local out of control. I think one of the notable things is this is a product that is desired by people, and those are people who work at the local hospitals. They work in the schools. They are there to serve people in those communities, but they don't have the ability to buy a house in a particular geography. And that was what was so encouraging about looking at this this product that I saw in Texas. There were, I think, four or five different types of houses, some quite small, some getting a little bit larger as you move along. But they had exactly what a lot of us have been talking about. It was proximity to a brand new high school so that their kids could go to school and get a great education. There was a thriving business community that was wrapped around this. So I think what we're seeing is if we build these types of different housing products, other things will follow, and our communities are going to become stronger, more vibrant. It's going to serve the people who are looking for the type of houses that I just described, like the lady who bought her first home, who cleans houses for a living. So I'm not saying that it doesn't exist anywhere, but I've driven around this state. I know that a lot of us haven't seen it, and I know that we need to do better.
This may be a question for Senator Mitchell. This bill would allow for more multifamily housing and adjustments to the zoning regulation. Are there any protections in the bill to prevent developers who may not have the best interests in mind for coming into cities and creating housing that may not be the best for the community? There's a lot of developers in, I know there was one in Duluth that had affected these people living there. You know, they weren't great developers. I mean, are there any protections in that bill that would prevent developers from taking advantage of this?
So we do have, you know, the ability that it's only so many sized units and things of that nature. We are still also working. I just had a meeting with, you know, the city representatives before this. So we're still working on those issues. You know, I think, unfortunately, that those bad developers come in all shapes and sizes, and even without a bill like this, occasionally manage to do something. I have one in my community that says they do affordable housing, and then they have raised rents and gotten seniors out of that affordable housing by raising rent so much, so it wasn't truly affordable. So I think we need to make sure that our environmental protections are also being enforced so that things are being done in a mindful way on that direction. But overall, especially the piece where we can build closer to transportation, public transportation, environmental building, things of that nature will so reduce our carbon footprint that this is definitely going to help the environment. Representative Kraft, do you have anything to? Oh, yeah, okay.
I can jump in and just so I'm the co-lead with Rep. Kraft on the House side. So it's pretty cool. We're tag teaming this bill together. And I just wanted to note, you know, Duluth is my community, and we saw that Minnesotans are saying that we need to be able to afford our lives and afford places that give us housing choice and housing sovereignty. And one of the things that we know is that it's a numbers game and the math is just really hard to get to. And so, an example in my home community where we saw multi-unit family housing come in and be pitched as it's going to be mixed in income and have some affordability in, but as they went along and trying to make the math and the financing work, they actually turned that second story into cottages or short-term rentals, which then displaced and further gentrified the neighborhood that I grew up in. So one of the things that's really important in this bill that locks in that the multifamily guaranteed by right in commercial districts, that you have to have at least 20% of the units restricted to those who do not exceed 50% of the area median income, or at least 40% of the units are restricted to those who do not exceed 60% AMI. And the really important thing is that those projects must be affordable for 30 years. So that would protect renters like that situation who were displaced and sold in empty promise that they'd be able to stay there.
Can someone speak to the public comment aspects of this? A lot of times these suburban cities are doing what their people are asking them to do, which is to keep out certain types of people. What are your public process provisions in the bill? What's left and what do you get rid of?
How I would answer that question is that this bill is designed to increase the rights of Minnesotans who are being excluded by some of the processes that you're talking about. Your question kind of highlights some of the historical exclusionary zoning practices that have left us in the state we're in with some of the biggest racial gaps in housing for home ownership or for renters. And what we need to do is be creating a playing field where there's more choices, more opportunities for Minnesotans. That's what Minnesotans are asking of us.
Okay, but one of the ways you do that is you restrict public comment, public process. Representative Kraft, you look like you want to answer this.
So, you know, cities, and I come from a city council, you're very focused on what's right for your community. This has become a much broader issue than within each individual community. So we are trying to streamline processes, make things administrative where possible, so that that cities either intentionally or inadvertently don't put up barriers that are wrong for where we need to go to as a state. So yes, we are looking at making sure that those processes are good. And we're, you know, public comment is important, and so we're trying to strike the right balance. But sometimes it's gotten too far as a way of keeping people out or keeping housing out versus allowing the housing that we need.
I would also like to say, I know there are cities that would like to do more things like this, but to the public comment point, sometimes it is a loud minority that will really come and fight affordable housing coming in. And so that can be a hard decision for city council members or mayors to make when you have that very vocal minority. Whereas if now we have a state law that helps with that framework, you know, they don't have to make that hard public decision that could cost them in a future election or something else. So they can kind of do the right thing without having to do it in a way that is within their city and might cause them some political damage. So I have heard from people that, you know, off the record are saying, like, we like this. It's just something we wouldn't have been able to do.
You guys have touched on this. Right now, so much of the private investment is going into multifamily rental. Does any of this legislation try to spur or incentivize private developers to put similar money into these types of owned units?
I'm not sure.
Well, is these affordable units that are actually owned by a person rather than rental?
So the Representative Kraft could speak with more detail, but this, the missing middle piece incentivizes more affordable units to own. So there's base level numbers, but there's a bonus. You can have additional units if units are at an affordable level. And so we take that incentive process to spur the kinds of housing, especially the more affordable home ownership opportunities.
Yeah, I would say, you know, we set a level of units that are the baseline, and then the incentives encourage affordability, net zero building, as well as if you're close to transit, some additional density bonuses, because it just makes sense.
Anything else? Thank you.
A couple more real quick. Representative Nash, I think you said you've been advocating on housing issues like this for 10 years. What's different now? Why is this the right time?
You know, I think what's finally happened is that more and more people are talking to folks around the state, and they're recognizing just where we are. And, you know, I'll pick on Mary. I'm not the token Republican. There are multiple House authors that are Republicans. There are people who have told me that they're fully supportive of this. What's changed is I think that we've finally heard from enough Minnesotans that it's time to stop that local out of control. And let me just say, so many cities are doing this right as it is right now. But, and we're not certainly saying all cities are bad. I'm a former mayor, and the city that I live in is doing a great job. However, we're not meeting the needs of the people of Minnesota. We're 106,000 housing units behind. So something has to change. And I'm grateful that my colleagues are here. Chair Howard and I last year went at it in committee a number of times. And there were times because they had the votes, I felt like I was being patted on the head saying, well, not today. But today is not that day. Today is the day that we're going to begin working on fixing the housing market so that people like the lady that I saw in Texas can buy their first home. Or that, you know, all of my six kids could possibly one day come back to the state of Minnesota, which would make their mom very happy, kids watching it, so that they can afford to buy a house in the community that they grew up in if they chose. And we're hoping that they do that and that we are able to make the playing field level so that market forces can come to bear and that they can buy their first home.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.